This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Over the last year, we've explored different issues that impact our region's aging population. But different communities and cultures think about the aging process in their own way and face different challenges as they reach 65 and older. Today, we'll continue our monthly series on issues related to aging by talking about aging across different cultures and communities in the Coulee region. Joining us today is Cecil Adams, a founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network in La Crosse, Daniel Green, lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Catherine Schneider, a retired clinical psychologist and author of Occupying Aging, Delights, Disabilities, and Daily Life, joining us from Eau Claire. And I just want to start the conversation by, you know, having you each share a little bit about yourself and kind of your perspective on this issue. And Cecil, we'll start with you.
I was born in 1949 in Charleston, South Carolina. And so I'm looking, you know, a couple of years from 70. And as far as growing up in America as an African American in Charleston, South Carolina, it's been a lot of verbal history that I can still maintain and still be able to exert. And I do that through the African American Mutual Assistance Network, with Juneteenth and with our youth programs, the Next Step and We the People program. So I come and I can bring a perspective from experience rather than textbooks. And I'm also am very, very popular with African American history and what we have contributed to the United States. And a lot of that, well, most of that has not even been taught even as I was growing up. So when you're still living it and you're still experiencing it, and then I had the pleasure to have and see an African-American president, and the history that I have, that was something that I still celebrate when you understand the history of African-Americans in the United States.
Daniel, you know, can you share a little bit about yourself and kind of this perspective you bring to this issue?
Not as old as my colleague. Getting close, though. Was born in 56 and at the time lived around the Dells area, often lived with my grandparents. And we lived in tar paper shacks that Grandpa Choka had built. We had to, my uncles had to haul those old metal milk containers down to this perfect spring. I remember that spring was perfectly round and it was white down the bottom and bubbling up all the time. And I felt sorry for them because they'd have to carry that water for over a mile. We ate a lot of large sandwiches back then. If we were lucky, we had salt and pepper to flavor it. And I didn't suffer being a child back then. But as an adult now, the Ho-Chunk are exceptional in that they're showing casino profits. It's very exceptional amongst Native Americans. And because we are, we've got these profits, life has become better. The quality of life has risen. And I lament that those elders are not here to see it. That, yeah, I wish my mom could have seen it. I wish, you know, my grandparents could have seen it. But like my colleague Cecil, I'm here to tell the story. You know, I remember, and I find myself in an advantage being an educator. I take advantage of it whenever I can, like now.
And Kathy, tell us a little bit about yourself and your perspective on this issue.
I'm same age as Cecil, and I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I was blind from birth, so I have history living before the Americans with Disabilities Act and all those kinds of great laws, as well as after. And the reason I'm on a aging show, in addition to the fact I'm aging, is that half of people over 65 will develop disabilities. And those of us who've been around the block a few times sometimes have some tricks of the trade to share.
You know, Kathy, obviously a large portion of the population in the Coulee region is white. And, you know, how do you think that from your experience that, you know, aging has been thought about? You know, how do people think about seniors and their elders?
I think a lot of times being a white female, because there's another difference, male aging versus female aging and how that's perceived. I think when you add disability to the picture, women tend to be erased. When we think about elderly, we think about, oh, men are wise elders, and sometimes the women sort of disappear, especially in Hollywood and places like that. We're invisible, we're ignored, or we're condescended and brought out on Mother's Day or something like that, that, oh, well, let's be good to the old dear. So I think as a woman and as a person with a disability, there again, there's images of elderly that aren't all that positive. Maybe we're up on a pedestal, but it's not real.
And Daniel, from your perspective in the Native American community, you know, traditionally, how have people thought about their elders?
Traditionally, it's a huge part of the culture. Oh, respect elders at all costs. But what actually comes down is it's as much talk as anything else. Was horrified 20 years ago. I started seeing Native American elders going into nursing homes, convalescent homes, this sort of stuff. We had prided ourselves that we never did that to our elders. But again, we're Americans. Some of us have to work two jobs like others do. And so these elders, as much as we want to take care of them, have them in our homes, sometimes it's just not financially possible.
Yeah, so you think finances are a big reason maybe that has been changing? Or are there other factors too?
Yeah, as far as the Ho-Chunk, I'm sure it's like a culture shock to all of a sudden we have money. And we've got a lot of problems around that. 18-year-olds getting a lot of money, and it's a lot to be dealt with. A lot to be dealt with quickly. It's improving. It's improving, but it's still work to be done.
Mm-hmm. And Cecil, you know, from your perspective, in you know, in the African American community, what kind of role have seniors played, or you know, how have people thought about aging?
Growing up, for me and my generation, it was the grandparents, and it was your father, and it was, you know, grandpa, grandma, poppy, okay? And that instilled a lot of schooling. You know, we called it old school, and we called it mother wit and be streetwise. And so this is how we grew up with our elders. And I would say by the time I was 40, that was no longer evident. And I found myself looking at others in that generation, looking just to grandma. It was mommy, it was grandma. The absentee father was, I don't know why it inclined so quickly. Doing a little research, I know welfare had a lot to do with it. And the single parenting and the mother taking charge, leaving the child with grandma. Now it's the grandmother right now. And the generation that's behind the 40-year-olds, I mean, the grandmothers are like 35 years old. And there's no mother wit. There's no street smarts when it comes to a complete growth of an individual. It's segmented depending on where they live, what activities is going on in that particular area, how big that population is. So when you look at La Crosse, you're not going to start seeing that grandmother image. It's too small of a community. But you go to Chicago, Illinois, and you go to Madison, and you go to a lot of areas in L.A., Watts and Compton and so forth. Then you're going to, you have that young, too young mother, too young grandmother, absentee father, and you don't see an elderly African-American with gray hair. That was something that was a shock to a lot of young men when I was a recruiter at Winona State University, and I went into that neighborhood, and here's this black man with gray hair walking around. And it was like, whoa, you know, that's an oddity. So the 18-year-olds, I think, is going to be the saving generation for the African-Americans, because there's enough of us 65-year-olds that are still hanging around and listening. Our ears are really to the street now, rather to, you know, going out and just being in a home or drinking our life away, or we call it having pity parties, you know. We have to pull ourselves up and take charge, because we lost a whole generation of African Americans.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about aging across different cultures and communities, how different communities in the Coulee region think about and experience getting older. We're here with Cecil Adams from the African American Mutual Assistance Network, Daniel Green from the Ho-Chunk Nation, and retired psychologist Catherine Schneider from Eau Claire. And Cecil, you're talking about, you know, who has been, you know, defined as the elders. And so, you know, from your perspective right now, who would you, you know, I guess what qualifies someone as a senior, you know, in the African American community?
Experience, knowledge, and that the attitude of I will listen, I will take part, then I will act. That's who they look up to. And it's, you know, can you help me? And it depends on the individual, of course, and it depends on their background and their heritage. Were they hurt? Did they succeed in what they were doing? So you have all these other little factors that have to do with it. But an elderly for the African-American in La Crosse could be a teacher. It could be an educator. It could be someone with knowledge. That's who they look toward as far as getting advice. Are you knowledgeable? Are you educated? Because I want to step up to where you are. How can I do that?
And Kathy, you know, from your perspective, what qualifies someone as a senior or as an elder?
Well, that's an interesting question, because within the disability community, somebody might actually be younger, but they may have more experience living as a person with a disability than somebody who acquires their disability as an elderly person. So I think sometimes when somebody is an elderly person by calendar years, they may end up considering some of us who are younger but yet have had a disability for longer as the elders to be looked up to, as far as how do you cope? How do you cope with people's reactions to your disability? So sometimes elder, as in wise person, might actually be younger than the person who's doing the elder calling.
And do you think there have been I don't know, there have been changes in that, or is that something that's always kind of, I don't know, been a part of this community, or do you think there have been changes in the way people with disabilities, you know, think about their quote-unquote elders?
I think there have been huge changes, because it used to be a disability was something that you thought about only in terms of it's a medical thing, go to doctors to get fixed, go to special schools to learn techniques to deal with it. But nowadays, people realize that disability is also somewhat of a identity. It determines how people treat you, and it's something where there's actually a movement for disability rights, civil rights. For example, in this last election, I saw it pointed out in a lot of mainstream media places that if people with disabilities voted as a bloc, it would be one of the largest minority blocs, because something like 20% of Americans have a disability. And it's the last civil rights movement. Daniel and Cecil come from much longer, much more advanced civil rights movements than disability rights. But we're coming along.
And Daniel, from your perspective, what qualifies someone as an elder or as a senior?
Again, like Cecil said, it's the knowledge base. That's where the value is. And for the elders, my grandparents, their age group, the average schooling was something like third or fourth grade, and they had to quit and go to work. So there wasn't a lot of, if you will, white man's education in my elders. But the power that they have is that they still know the language, that they still know how the clans operate. And so we go to them. There are rules about who I may not talk back to, who I may tease and who I may not tease. There are those who I can ask for anything, and they can't refuse me because it's within our obligations. So this is the knowledge that the elders are greatly revered for. We have a protocol that when you need something, you need something to be done. It might be simply singing your child a song or any number of other things. There's always a way to ask, and you can't be denied once it's asked that way, and you ask the person you're supposed to. This is the knowledge that, unfortunately, is diminishing. The language is greatly diminished from what it once was. I haven't been to church in a while, but the last time I was, it was down to, again, I think we're like other Americans in that way. I think of the Nisei studies. It's what the Hmong are going through right now, that the young people are more interested in blending in fitting in, et cetera. And I think that's a part of what's going on with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to, you touched on a lot of great things that, elders or seniors, bring to the community. And, I wonder if there are avenues or ways that seniors are trying to, pass along that knowledge that they have and those things that they bring.
We have language clubs in every area where we have significant Ho-Chunks, and we have education centers, and those elders are employed to teach the language to the children. And this is going on in maybe 8-10 different places around in Wisconsin. La Crosse, certainly going on. And we have a tribal aging unit to take care of our elders and to keep them not just cohesive, but moving. What do you want to do? What do you want to see? So they'll often, they like to put together educational parties. That's the way the Ho-Chunk are. We eat with everything. And so the elders are no different. So they'll put together these educational parties. They might do some horseback riding or something like that with the younger people. And then they sit down and they have a traditional meal. And again, this is something you learn. There's a protocol. There's what you're supposed to do. And if you don't know, be quiet and listen, and you'll learn. That's a big part of the elders is, our identity is right there.
That's Daniel Green, lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, here with us today to talk about the aging process for different cultures and communities in the Coulee region. Also joining us is Cecil Adams, a founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network in La Crosse, and Kathy Schneider, a retired clinical psychologist and author from Eau Claire. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Cecil, I wonder, you know, what you feel like elders really bring to the community, and in what ways, you know, do you see seniors, you know, looking to pass on that knowledge or you know, that experience?
The problem with the African American, this generation in particular, is we don't have that respect that the Native Americans are having and showing and exerting and saying this has to be done, this must be done. That was something that was in effect in my generation. You didn't talk back. You knew when to be quiet. All it took was a stare or a look, and you sat still. And nowadays, if you do that look, you might get a reply from the child. What are you looking at? And, you know, you hit me, I'll call the police. And these are changing times that, like I said, we just lost that whole generation. So the parents today just kind of let the children really grow up by themselves, make decisions by themselves. And you hear things like, oh, you grown now. You know, you're 15. You get a job. You know, you're going to help. So it's more of that type of a relationship with the parent. I don't want to call it dysfunctional. I just want to call it out of touch. And if you can gain that respect, and gain is the moving word there, if you can gain that respect back from the youth, then you can start back governing your aging rights.
And do you see that happening, that gaining of the respect, you know, that process?
With the 18-year-olds, with that group, with this new, I think they call them millennials or something now, I see that because I interact with them. And my own granddaughter's 18, and she's like, oh, Papa, you know. It's really funny because I could tell she wanted to say, oh, I'm glad you're still here. But she don't want to say that. But but that's kind of where the 18-year-olds are now. The young man that she's dating is going through a lot of different family issues. And she asked me, you know, would you mind talking with him when he needs to have a question or he has some ideas? I said, oh, sure. My daughter, my middle daughter, who's 38, you lose track after 30, 38, and her husband are having a lot of societal issues, and they call. So, but see, she's a product of me, and now he's a part of that product through her. So that 30, 40-ish is okay, and they're trying. And they're gaining respect from their children, which is the 18-year-olds. So, yeah, it'll come back, but the millennials are the key to gaining that respect back.
And Kathy, Cecil sparked a thought for me. Can
yeah,
I jump in here?
Please do.
I was just thinking about, okay, yes, sometimes young people come to me as an elder in the disability community, but sometimes I also go to the young people, and they teach me about some of the technology stuff where they are far ahead of me. And yet, when it comes to, well, how do you deal with discrimination, I have things to teach them. So I think when it's going well, it goes back and forth as to who can teach and who can learn.
Kathy Schneider, a retired clinical psychologist from Eau Claire, is here with us today to talk about how different cultures and communities think about aging in the November installment of our monthly series on aging. She's joined by Cecil Adams, a founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network in La Crosse, and Daniel Green, a lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on aging across cultures. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're continuing our monthly series on issues important to our region's aging population. Different cultures and communities think about aging in their own way, but some issues are universal for seniors in the Cooley region. And as more of our population reaches 65 and older, understanding the similarities and differences for seniors from different communities is important. Joining us to talk about aging across cultures is Cecil Adams, a founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network in La Crosse, Daniel Green, lecturer at UWL and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Catherine Schneider, a retired clinical psychologist and author of Occupying Aging, Delights, Disabilities, and Daily Life. You know, I'd be interested to know, Kathy, you know, what's something that you've learned from elders in your experience?
I've learned some patience. I tend to want to accomplish things right now, and when I learn a new piece of technology or a new skill, or when I'm dealing with a difficult, unfair situation, I've learned from elders that honey attracts more flies than vinegar, and Rome wasn't built in a day, and sayings like those, you can laugh at them, but at the same time, they're very true. That we shall overcome, and it really is someday, and it may not be right now like I'd like.
And Daniel, I would pose the same question to you. You know, what are some of the things that you've learned from elders in your experience?
My grandmother and my aunt, I could never go to their house. I could never go and visit without coming away with a present. They might not even know I was coming, but I'd show up, and so immediately we'd start eating, and I could see my aunt. She'd be looking around, what can I give him? You know, and she'd give me this beautiful beaded pendant, and I knew darn well it must have taken a month or more to make, and she didn't think twice about it. She'd give it to me because that's the way they traditionally believe, that you're supposed to constantly give and feed the people, so it makes them feel good. And by fortune, I've learned that also, that, yeah, it feels really nice to give.
Absolutely. And Cecil, you know, what are some things that you've learned from elders in your experience?
Well, my father was a believer in the rite of passage, and he had a few things up his sleeves that he measured that by. And one of them was, you need to know in front of who you stand. No matter what the situation is, if you're at school, if you're playing baseball, basketball, football, and you're talking back and forth with someone, or someone calls you in to the office and asks a question, know who that person is, what that person represents before you open your mouth. You know, are you Cecil? Yes, I am. And who are you? You know, be respectful. Because that was, remember, I told you, the respect was the key thing. And so he taught me that, to be respectful, but also know in front of who you stand. And my grandmother, which is on my mother's side, was an ordained minister. And her belief in God It's what gave me that motivation to seek the truth. And my, you know, our truth, you know. I'm not saying there's no other truth, but my truth. And she instilled that. And so I learned that, and I learned to bring others on board, not just to be the type, like she told me, don't be so heavenly bound that you're no earthly good. And that was one of her sayings that, as you see, still stuck with me. So I practiced that as well. And then on my father's side, his father, he was a little character, and I guess there's a character in every family. And he told me, if someone strikes you with a rock, he says, then you pick up a bat. And I said, okay. And if someone throws a shoe, he said, you pick up a truck and you throw. So his thing was, if they approach you in, you know, in a negative way, in a way that's going to cause you a bodily harm, he said, to prevent that from happening again, you strike back 10 times worse. And it got me in a lot of trouble, but it also stopped the bullies. And I wasn't a bully because I wasn't taught to be that. So my whole upbringing was respect, know in front of who you stand, believe in your God, and don't let anyone walk on you. And that's what I keep, and that's what I also bring into my children and my grandchildren as well.
Over this last year, you know, we've focused on a lot of different issues impacting seniors in the Cooley region, whether it's transportation, housing, finances. And I wonder, Daniel, if there are, you know, certain challenges that you see Native Americans or people who are part of the Ho-Chunk Nation, you know, as they reach elderly, you know, as they reach old age, you know, what are some of the challenges they face?
We have health concerns that are elevated. Won't go into the reasoning, but they're clearly there. Diabetes, arthritis, obesity, unfortunately, malnutrition, or not malnutrition, poor nutrition is a big concern. And even into the elders, I don't know what to think about that. My grandfather died because he wouldn't give up his diet. He was just, I used to come home when I lived with my grandparents. I'd come home and late at night, so, you know, being a teenager, I'd open up the fridge to see what's in there to eat, and there would be some sort of a critter looking back at me that I'd never seen before, right? And I go, oh my God, it's still got the head on. And but that's the way he learned to eat, and you know, unfortunately, he loved fatty foods, he loved salty foods, etc. It's something I've been fortunate because of my education that I at least wrestle with it. I'm not a saint in no regard, but we picked up some bad habits along the way. Rather, they were forced upon us, largely the boarding schools, but there's also the reservation systems, et cetera. And so we did what we could with what we had, but we suffered physically because of it.
And Kathy, you know, what are some specific challenges that you see people with disabilities, you know, as they age or, you know, even as they develop a disability, you know, what are challenges they have to face?
Transportation is huge because sometimes the person needs to give up driving and all of a sudden it's public transportation, it's bumming rides, it's walking, and it's hard in many of our communities, and especially in the rural areas, when you can't drive anymore. It creates a lot of dependency. Then people have to deal with, okay, how am I going to ask for assistance, but at the same time feel good about myself as a person who has something to give. Also, dealing with other people's attitudes, if they look at sidelining. For example, I hear people saying, oh, I'm a caretaker of somebody with dementia. No, you are a caregiver. You take care of property, you give care to people. And you might think, well, that's quibbling about words, but it's not. It's an attitude about this other human being who's standing right next to you. So I would say, sure, the concrete things like transportation, like income, the poverty rate among people with disabilities is twice that than that with people without disabilities, but it's also the attitudes that are put out there about what it is to be a person with a disability.
And Cecil, what are some specific challenges that, you know, you see people in the African American community having to face as they age?
The greatest challenge that I've been witnessing is the displacement of the elderly person from the home. And kind of left on their own, and the county or the city most likely steps in and pick up the ball at that particular point. But there's a lot of reasons for that. You have a lot of grandmas in particular, not granddads, but grandmas, going back to the grandchild. So that's a transition that it seems to be working, but that's not how it was supposed to be, but that's how it's becoming. So it's like the grandchildren are now becoming the caregivers, and technology is part of that, to move around now with this technology for the aging is almost impossible. And if they don't have a granddaughter, someone that can show them, teach them, they get lost in the system. So the system steps in. And sometimes the system works real well, and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on that particular person that's behind the desk. I've seen beautiful people, I've seen not so good people, and I've seen terrible people. So who is that elderly person going to get? And that's part of the aging problem as well. And I'm in a unique situation because I'm also disabled. I'm a disabled vet, and at 60%. And going through that disability, being African American, was a daily struggle from the time I got out of the military until I turned about 40. Because at 40, I took myself, I looked at what my dad and my grandpa and my grandmother told me, and I started putting that to work, including my religious background. And when you get self-esteem, when you get motivated, you start acting. And once you get almost 70, you can start telling folks that are coming in, I need. Then you have something to say. You're like, no, I've been there. And, well, you haven't I suffered. Well, then how did you? And then you tell them. So it's a unique situation, like I said, when you be like Daniel, and I didn't know that she didn't have sight and have accomplished so much. That's a great deal, and I really admire her courage.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about aging across different cultures, how different communities in the Coulee region think about and experience getting older. We're here with Cecil Adams from the African American Mutual Assistance Network, Daniel Green from the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Catherine Schneider from Eau Claire, a retired psychologist. And Cecil, you know, where do you see, seniors and you know, elderly going to seek resources, whether that's, traditional resources like transportation or maybe even financial assistance, food assistance, or maybe it's, you know, community. Where are people kind of looking for those?
Well, in the big cities that has a large African-American population, there are a lot of programs that are in set and works very well for them. In a smaller community of African Americans, like in La Crosse, the facilities and the programs that are already in place will work. But it's getting those two together. And I was fortunate enough to be a stakeholder in the La Crosse Community Collaborative, which is designed to do just that. So I see the progress that's here, and I put together what is called a safe place for the African Americans to come to, and that's the Juneteenth celebration. It's fun, it's free, but then all of those programs are at that event, and they have to go to each table because they have a passport and they got to be checked off. So I know at least if they're not using the service, they are exposed to that service. So that's the key. You have to get them to come out, come to the table, and see what's there, see what's available, and learn about those different programs.
Daniel, where do you see, people, seniors in your community, seeking resources or community?
The Ho-Chunk are exceptional, as I explained earlier, because we have profits. The casinos are doing well. so they're provided for. They have the tribal aging unit. We have lots of workers to look after them. And then there are those traditionalists. There's whatever the numbers are. As to who practices and who doesn't, there are those that are traditional, and they know that that's their job, and they look forward to it, to going and feeding. Just, we got to take so-and-so. I know she's going to want to eat. My brother's good at that. He always goes and he picks mahinch. It's milkweed. They call it Indian spinach, and it's tiring work, it's in the hot sun, bugs and all of that stuff. But he does it all the time, and he gets, he'll get big sacks of it. And it's not for him. It's for the elders. And I'm really proud of him that he does that. And there are other such things so the elders are, at least Ho-Chunk elders, they're provided for, I'm happy to say.
And Kathy, where do people with disabilities, where can they seek resources or community?
Oh, we're lucky in Wisconsin. In every county, we have an aging and disability resource center, and that's a great place to start looking for resources, either for yourself or for somebody you care about. Also, support groups. The internet's a wonderful thing to find community and resources to plug into. I wanted to give a shout out to something that's gone beneath a lot of what we've talked about today, I think, which is storytelling. And on the radio, of course, that's your bread and butter. But typically either Thanksgiving or the day after is even nationally dedicated to storytelling. So going out and listening to aging relatives and taking the time to listen, taking the time to learn from, and give to those people, I think is really another way of making a community that's better for everybody.
Daniel, I think you have some, you know, experience and thoughts on the importance of storytelling.
I wrote a book, I co-wrote a book last winter entitled My Name Is Not Chief. The reasoning for writing it was that I found that I'm average. I'm very average. The qualities within my life as a Native American are found in the majority of Native Americans, qualities like violence, poverty, inner city. The most of us lived in the inner city, et cetera. And as I studied Native America, it became clear to me that there were no modern stories, that Native America is not allowed into modern times. If you take a look at the advertising, logos and mascots, etc., all Native American imagery, including the Colossus of Kitsch down in Riverside Park, all of it is from the past. And so that affects everyone's thinking about Native America, but in particular, it affects young Native people to the point that their self-esteem, etc., goes down. So I've spent a good amount of time trying to do something about this. And one of those efforts was the book. It's meant for educators, and it's meant to give them a slice of life from a very average Indian.
I mean, Cecil, what are your thoughts on the importance of storytelling?
I believe that wholeheartedly. And that's why when we have our Next Step We the People program, we open up that conversation, and the conversation and the storytelling actually relaxes a lot of people. And I do a lot of talking in college and universities. I go to the diversity student unions and so forth, and all I do is talk about the past, talk about why I am who I am, and the different occupations that I had and how I achieved them and how I overcame institutional racism and how I overcame obesity, how I overcame my disability through the Navy, getting shot, being shot at, how I quit smoking, you know, because, you know, being a cop and with a cigarette in your mouth and you're running after a perk and you you catch him and you can't even say you're under arrest because you're out of breath, you know. So, you know, so those type of stories, you know, when you bring it out, people listen. And I try to make the story be effective in what we're doing. So if it's a cultural diversity course, well, I tell stories that is around that. I talk about Charleston, South Carolina, growing up in the South, growing up and seeing the hanging tree and the slave market and those sort of things. And they like it because it's not from a book. It's not from something I read. Books are good, but but it's what I lived. And It's like a true story. You know, when you watch a movie and they go, this is a true story, you're more into it than just, you know, something that Hollywood just want to throw at you.
Kathy, you know, as we move forward, as we look to the future, you know, how do we make sure that the experiences, the knowledge that, you know, our elders have are included in the way that we think about caring for them? You know, I mean, more of our population is going to reach old age, and we're obviously going to have to respond to that. How do we do that to make sure that all cultures and communities and people are taken care of?
I think we do it through storytelling, and I would add my book, Occupying Aging, to that list. I also blog modern-day storytelling out on the Internet. I think also we do it through politics. I know people are sick of talking about politics at this point in life, but to make sure that more vulnerable people are taken care of, sure, I individually do what I can, but when we band together in politics, we are stronger.
I pose the same question to you, you know, as well, Daniel. How do we make sure that, you know, all people are taken care of as we look to serve an aging population?
I would have to go back to both of my colleagues have commented upon perception, you know, how we perceive the elders, you know, what kind of respect, usefulness. There's a perception of a lack of usefulness, and it just couldn't be less true. We need to go out and discover that. I am greatly hurt that the elders are dying who knew about the boarding schools. My aunt wouldn't talk about it. She'd get mad. My mom went to them as well, and my mom died before I could really talk to her at length about it. So I want to go out and I want to know these things. You know, what was life like back in the 30s and in the 20s? You know, we see how bad it is now with Trump, right? A pronounced bigot. Well, it was even more pronounced back then. I'd like to know what those things are about.
We've been talking with Daniel Green, a lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, Cecil Adams, a founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network in La Crosse, and Catherine Schneider, a retired clinical psychologist and author in Eau Claire, about aging across different cultures and communities. Today's show is the 11th in our monthly series on issues related to aging. Every month this year, we've explored a new topic related to the growing population of people 65 and older in our area. In December, during the last show in our series, we'll reflect on different issues we've covered over the last year and joys and concerns we've heard from seniors in the Cooley region. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.